The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
I said it yesterday. It's never been more true. As I analyze today's news, The Dory Monson Show is your only source of truth and light. Ursula, do I have to fix all the media in the city? Do I have to fix every single media outlet, counterbalance, be the sole source of truth and light in the region?
No.
Yes!
No.
Yes, I clearly do.
Why?
Because I...
What happened now?
I'm watching the coverage of what Inslee proposed yesterday. I'm seeing all the others. I'm seeing stories in the Times. It's like I have to fix every other media outlet. And by the way, I love our media brethren. I don't want anybody to take this the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
This is anything but love.
Yes.
It's tough sometimes. You know, you're a parent. Sometimes you got to employ some tough love.
Yes.
Okay. So that's what we're going to do today. We're going to dole out some tough love. We're coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio, and it is time for The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Top story.
But here's the thing. Here's my question for you. And I am guessing that our own radio station is guilty of this, but every TV station, the newspapers, I saw and read all of the coverage of Jay Inslee's his press conference yesterday.
Okay.
And they all said that to pay for the $3.4 billion in new taxes, that Jay Inslee has proposed a capital gains tax. I've explained. It's an income tax. Nobody else is calling it an income tax. And I think that everybody in the media, and I mean this very seriously, I think they're doing their readers, their viewers, their listeners an incredible disservice when they don't call this capital gains tax what it really is. In income tax, it's unconstitutional. This is settled. I read the letter from the IRS yesterday. So why would, because everybody's loath for an income tax. But, you know, Inslee says, well, capital gains tax will only be on the rich. It's like the media is carrying the water for Jay Inslee. Why wouldn't they just acknowledge that this is settled, that capital gains tax is an income tax, and call it what it is so their viewers, listeners, readers would have an accurate depiction of what it is?
But isn't it being called a capital gains tax because he is saying that it's only going to affect a certain number of people?
Which is unconstitutional, not allowed in our state, and is an income tax. The IRS, I mean, there's a letter from the IRS to the Washington state representatives that say, yes, capital gains is income. And I just...
What you're doing, though, Dory, is what's great and what's why people need to listen to you is that
exclusively
you're offering
an in-depth
analysis. So he calls it a capital gains tax. It's being referred to as a capital gains tax.
But why wouldn't
And you're explaining why you see it, because you're saying... That it, I mean, it still needs to be litigated. You're saying it's a done deal, but I think
it does need to be litigated.
He's thinking that he is going to prevail.
Yeah, and he's wrong. And he's wrong.
And I guess we'll see.
And I don't know. Well, yes, we will. I've already made a bet with the states. I'll make that bet with anybody, although we've got a whack job Supreme Court in our state. So it might be the U.S. Supreme Court that would ultimately decide it, because our state Supreme Court doesn't care about our state constitution like I do. So anyway, I was crunching numbers. The state budget that Jay Inslee has proposed, it's $54 billion, which includes $3.7 billion in new taxes. We have 7.4 million people in Washington, and that includes children. You do the math. It's basic math. Jay Inslee wants $7,297 per person for every man, woman, and child to go to the state of Washington. If you have a family of four, a husband, a wife, a couple, whatever you are, and two children. That's $29,000 that Jay Inslee wants from your family to the state of Washington. Is that acceptable to people? He wants to impose an unconstitutional income tax to achieve that goal. It's just absolutely mind-blowing to me. He wants what? I'm looking at all these stories in the news. A guy stabbed to death this morning in Tacoma. A clerk shot during a robbery this morning in Renton. I mean, just this morning. We've got druggies running all around the region. We got people being stabbed to death on the streets. Clerks working at 3 a.m. getting shot. And Jay Inslee wants $1.1 billion for the whales.
We share so much with the orcas. We share about the same body temperature. We share about the same heartbeat rate. We share close familial social interactions and bonds.
Those are the stupidest reasons I've ever heard. I mean, you might say, yeah, whales are dying. We love whales. But the fact we have similar heart rates, it's just an absolutely stupid thing. And then there's another great point that a listener made to me. This is Bill, who emailed me. Because we've seen, the more we spend on homelessness around here, the worse the problem gets. We've attracted the druggies from all around the country. I mean, those are the people who are stabbing people to death in Tacoma and shooting people in Renton just this morning. The more we spend, the more we attract all of the druggies from around the country. Well, the same thing's going to happen with the whales, you know. Listener Bill wrote, Dory, if Jay Inslee gets his $1.1 billion for the whales, Washington State will see whales from all over the world illegally enter Puget Sound. Trump will then have to build a net across the Strait of Juan de Fuca. It's an excellent point, Bill. We're going to see a bunch of freeloading whales coming from Iceland and Japan into Puget Sound because they're, land of plenty. They give us free stuff there. We'll be putting cash down their blowholes. So that's an excellent point. And then did you see this? You know, he keeps telling us how, you know, people in rural King County who have septic tanks, they're the problem. They're the ones who are leaching into the streams that's getting into the town, which was a total lie in an attempt to tax people. But yet when the King County wastewater treatment plant pumps millions of gallons of raw sewage into Puget Sound? Does Dow Constantine, is he held accountable? Are any government employees held accountable? In fact, they released a report. Puget Sound cleaned itself from millions of gallons of raw sewage pouring into it. How miraculous. When government screw-ups lead to an ecological catastrophe, then the sound cleansed itself. But then Inslee turns around and says, oh, you have to give us $1.1 billion to save the whales. This morning, new news. Officials say a malfunctioning gate at a wastewater treatment plant on Bremerton's east side led to a spill of sewage and runoff into Port Washington Narrows and Dyes Inlet. The engineer there says about 200,000 gallons spilled into the sound. Again, when government does that, anybody held accountable? No, it's you and me. We gotta give them $1.1 billion to save the whales. A listener sent me a wonderful piece from 1990 or 1981. You know, Jay Inslee, he's really into weed. Tells the nation we have the best weed in Washington. He's starting to morph into Cheech and Chong.
Save the whales.
We share so much with the orcas.
They're funky mamas.
When we save them from pollution,
they're pretty bad to save those whales.
We save ourselves.
Save those big, bad, funky whales.
We pay to save what we love. We love our orcas.
We'll save all the whales.
We're gonna toe up to the mark, and we're gonna pay to save that. We love all those things.
Yeah. Oh, shoot them seals.
I'm proposing a $1.1 billion project for the critical salmon that orcas need. So unless we intervene aggressively and quickly, we could witness the demise of this iconic symbol of the state of Washington. We got the best weed in the United States.
Nice job, Nicole. Nicely done.
For 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we came up with this idea 5 minutes ago. Thanks. Was very impressive.
Thank you.
So, yes, Jay Inslee has morphed into Cheech and Chong. That's what we have learned through this whole process here. Okay, next up in the big lead.
The big lead. Bizarro world.
Okay, you know, I like to fight government. I like to fight the man. And I saw a story about a guy in Vermont who is doing that in a very unique way. And I wanted to introduce you to Ted Pelkey. Ted, thanks for coming on with me this afternoon.
Thank you.
Yeah, so tell me what your dispute is about out there. You have a business that you want to move from one place to another piece of property of yours. Is that right?
Yeah, I have a business that I would like to move to my home, actually. I live there. I want to put it on my property at my house and work right from there so I can walk out and go to work.
What kind of business is it?
We have a truck repair, and we recycle some monofilament, like a little warehouse-type thing. And we have commercial land there, so it's a small building. It's only 80 feet wide and 100 feet long is what we're looking to propose to build. You know, we have 11 acres of land. I think that's plenty. So,
And it's zoned commercial. It's not a residential zoning then.
Hey, well, it's zoned commercial, yes. And it's, you know, the town's trying to encourage commercial development in their town plan. So, I mean, the two things sort of go together, right?
So why are they denying you?
It's just they just, you know, it's more of a grudge thing when they don't. It's more we don't like you type situation than whether it meets the rules or not. I mean, we've already proved it meets the rules. We've won in court once already. It's just an ongoing thing. You know, in small town government, when people don't like you, you got one person on the board that hates you, and he tells you he hates you. Right there, you know, in the public eye, recorded and everything.
Yeah.
I mean, what kind of an honest shake are you going to get out of a development review board when the chair hates you? You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, I've only been talking with you for a couple of minutes, and you sound like a fine, pleasant man. What have you done to make them hate you?
Well, you know, it's like anything, you know. You might have wrapped heads with one of them once on issues that had nothing to do with the town thing, and then all of a sudden, you know, like our DRB guy, you know, I knew him before he ever lived in the town of Westford, and we had issues then, so now he moves to the town of Westford, and the first thing he does is get himself on a board, you know what I mean?
Okay.
And have to be the board you got to go in front of.
Okay.
You know, yeah.
So you have decided to fight back in a rather unique way, Ted. Tell me what you did.
No, we just, you know, we had mediation probably a few months ago, and they were going to give us another answer in 3 weeks or something, and 3 months had went by, and you know, me and my wife were out to eat, and we were just discussing it sitting at a bar, and, you know, I'm just fed up, and, you know, it's been 10 years of my life now, and, you know, I'd like to get a big giant middle finger statue and just put it on the front lawn, and you know, my wife, geez, that'd be pretty neat.
Wait a second. Ted, I've been married for 31 years, and when I throw out ideas like that to my wife, she says, I'm crazy. Your wife said that would be pretty neat?
Yeah, well, you know, you got to understand, me and my wife have fought this battle together, you know what I mean? We were two people that when we met, we didn't have 10 cents, you know?
Yeah.
We worked hard to get where we are today. I've thrown away a lot of money at this project.
Okay.
We haven't been treated fairly, you know what I mean?
Okay.
And she's all about, you know, we need to give them a taste of their own. So she stands beside me pretty good. So we're on the same page. Together.
Okay. So you went to, was it a chainsaw carver guy?
Yeah.
Okay.
And he whipped me up a middle finger.
And so how tall is the middle finger hand?
No, the whole thing is probably 6.5 to 7 foot. It probably weighs, you know, 600 pounds or something, you know. It's fairly large. And then we mounted it to a top of a 16-foot pole.
Okay. And I also heard you put up lighting on it so everybody can see it from the highway and from all around.
Absolutely. It's beautiful. Yeah. It's like the North Star shining out there. Yeah, it's beautiful.
And I also heard it's become quite a tourist attraction, Ted.
Absolutely. I cannot believe, you know, the people that come to visit the Finger. it's phenomenal. I would have never dreamed that it would have been such an attraction. It's downright impressive, I think.
Yeah, well, I've seen a picture of it. I'll get a picture from you so we can put it on our blog, too. Some people coming from all over New England for this?
Well, you know, I've seen, you know, people have been there, you know. There's people have come, you know, 250 miles to see the thing.
Wow.
And, you know, I mean, we have people from Newport, which is probably 75, 80 miles away.
Okay.
You know, there's people coming. Yeah, and it's last Saturday, you know, if we didn't have 150 cars, we didn't have one, you know. It's amazing.
Now, is this going to help you? The fact that you're flipping off the town of Westford, is that going to help you in your pursuit of this business goal?
You know, I really don't care at this point in time in my life. I put it out there to make a statement to the town, because you could scream at them what that Finger sort of means,
right?
And they wouldn't listen. They wouldn't hear you. I think they hear the Finger out there, and it says nothing. You know, if you stand there, it's really quiet. You can't hear nothing,
right?
But I think it's making a wicked statement. The people that come. I speak to quite a few of them. Some of them come to the house, knock at the door, want to shake your hand. I've heard no negatives on it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Nobody came and said, hey, boy, I think it's pretty derogatory what you've done. Take that down.
Right.
What kind of a person are you?
Everybody loves it.
I haven't heard that. I really do. I believe there's more love for the Finger than hate by far.
Okay, that's good to know. Do you and your wife have kids?
Yes, we do.
What do your kids think about it? They like you too?
My kids are very supportive of their father, and they're laughing. They get a kick out of it. And they, you know, you got to understand, my kids know dad, right?
Yeah.
You know, when dad tells you, you know, I'm going to do that,
right,
it means it. And they know dad. Dad's always taught them to stick up for their stuff, so their rights, and they think they're getting wrong done. And my family supports it.
Okay. Well, good stuff, Ted. Way to fight the man. I love hearing stories like that.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Okay. Ted, I really appreciate you coming on with me this afternoon. Thanks so much.
Yes. Thank you.
Ted Pelkey in Vermont. You got to fight back against government sometimes. All that is your big lead for today. Ursula's going to check the news, and then Seahawks coach Pete Carroll joins me next half hour here on the Dory Monson Show.
This is the Pete Carroll Show.
Right, here we go now, here we go now, here we go.
On Cairo Radio 97.3 FM, where the 12s hear the Hawks. The Pete Carroll Show is presented by Les Schwab and Bellevue Rare Coins. Now with Seahawks head coach Pete Carroll, here's Dory Monson.
Well, this could be the weekend where the Seahawks clinch a playoff spot as they travel down to Santa Clara to take on the 49ers. And on this Friday, let's talk with the coach of the Seahawks, Pete Carroll. Hey, Coach, great to talk with you today.
Hi, Dory. Good to be on with you.
What a fun role this has been. I mean, just the flow of the season and the, you know, the growth in the team. I have talked to so many fans, Pete, who have told me that they are having as much fun watching this team's growth as, you know, any of your past seasons here.
Well, that's great. That means it's translating and it's coming across that the fans can see the kind of fun that they're having and what they're bringing to it. You know, they're really making the most of it and they're enjoying the heck out of it and excited about every challenge and it's been fun to coach. I'm glad it's fun to watch too.
Yep. Yeah, that's certainly what I'm hearing. So Monday night, that was the kind of tidal wave in the fourth quarter where you take a 3-0 game and break it open. I know that, you know, as we talk about the momentum of a season, the momentum of a game, there have to be few things more satisfying than seeing a game just crack open and the kind of roll that you guys got on there.
Yeah, that was really exciting, and it was such a tight game the whole time, and we just got kind of accustomed to the fact it was going to be close, and then all of a sudden we get our touchdown, we hit the 2-point conversion, and the next thing you know we're in the end zone again on a spectacular play by Jacob Martin and Justin Coleman. It was really an exciting couple of exchanges there. Bobby's play too, to add to that on blocking the kick, and we put together a pretty good night.
Well, I loved Bobby in the post game because somebody asked him about just the pure athleticism of what he did, because you used to be able to get a running start, right? And now it's basically got to be a broad jump. Is that right?
Yeah, really. Do I remember a couple of years ago, Bobby had one. I think Cam Chancellor had two, and they changed the rules the next year, that you couldn't get a running start. But the rules are that now you can, if you're on the line of scrimmage, you can jump over the lineman if you don't leverage anybody underneath you. And so that's really what we did in practice and tried to get done.
Yeah, and so Bobby afterwards, when he was asked about it, he said, "It's no big deal. I'm an athlete." And I was thinking about that because at your level, everybody's a great athlete. And to see somebody whose athleticism, just that, that combination of speed and hops and strength, for someone to stand out athletically among all the great athletes in the league, that really is pretty exceptional.
Yeah, it is that. And Bobby's one of those players that does stand out, and he does things over time that just they kind of blow you away that he could be that special. But he is, and he's been for a long time. And, really, he has to be that unique an athlete and gifted to be this consistent this long, it's really been an incredible career we've watched.
Which led to a thought that I had. Who's the greatest athlete, just in pure athleticism, that you've ever coached?
Well, there was a guy back in Minnesota named Joey Browner that really was just a phenomenal athlete. He was big and fast and strong and
was he a defensive end?
He could do everything.
Defensive end?
No. That was his brother. He was a defensive back.
Okay.
He was number one pick by the Vikings from USC years ago, and I got there in his second year. And boy, he could do unbelievable things on the football field. He was amazing.
And has there ever been an athlete that you've seen and you thought, man, I would love to coach that guy?
Sure, all kinds of guys. I got to, one of the guys, my favorite guys playing was Ronnie Lott when he came through, and we had seen him play college, and then he had a great career, and then he got let out at San Francisco, went to Oakland, and then we got a chance to get him at the Jets in 1 year. So that was one of my real treasures, to have a chance to get him late in his career and have a chance to compete with him.
Nice. All right. As we said, it was a defensive struggle. Lots been made. Russell Wilson, lowest quarterback rating of his career. And I was, we were talking on the post-game show. I think quarterback rating is such a outdated stat because it doesn't take into effect the 40-yard run that he had and just the winning mentality that he brings. What do you think about quarterback rating as a stat?
Well, I think it's something to go by. There's a couple different ways to do it, but I think it's something to measure. It's nothing's that the absolute fixture on what you should trust in, but it does give you a gauge. That game in particular, we ran the heck out of the ball, and Russ probably had four or five balls he had to throw away so that without the rest of the numbers to support him, we only threw the ball 20 times, So he did play a nice football game, but we didn't hit in some of our stuff,
Yeah.
We had two big plays on the pass interferences that are like catching a deep ball that are the same almost as catching them. So we had some production out of the throwing game that gave us field position changes that was important to us. But he'll play much sharper than that. And obviously that was those were rare numbers.
I know how important turnovers are to you. What other stats are the most important to you?
Well, the points is what's important, particularly on defense.
Sense.
How many points you give up. That's always been one that's kind of not talked about as much as it as important as it is, but it starts with the ball, and then the points are huge. you know, one of the inside stats I think I've shared with you before is on offense, completions and rushes. You know, if you add up 50 or more of those, you pretty much win all those games. You know, you're about 85% winner when you do that. And so that's another really significant stat. To get there, it's a real statement about the kind of game that you played on offense, and so that it really adds to it all.
Well, and then the other stat for Russ is he became the winningest quarterback in NFL history in his first seven seasons. And, you know, that's just mind-blowing to me when you think about Joe Montana and, you know, Tom Brady. I mean, all these guys, that no one has won more games in their first 7 years than Russell Wilson. That's pretty exceptional.
I think that's an extraordinary mark, and that statistic I know is the most important one to Russ of all of them, you know, there's a lot of great players that have had great careers and lasted forever and all of that. They can't claim that one. So I'm really, really think that's a very important stat, you know, and he'll always own that. So it's pretty cool.
After the game, you made sure to give credit to John Schneider too for becoming the winningest GM in franchise history. And can you just share a little bit about what makes your guys' relationship so special and just work so well?
Well, you know, John is, you know, he started in this business so early at such a young age back in the day, and he has just become just so extraordinary that his savvy and his gut and that is so important in this, his side of the business, you know, and his experience with, we've been with really great people too, and he's drawn from that. But it's really the entire makeup that he brings. You know, he's really a great thinker, and he's creative, and there's like some real mental agility about him that allows him to be able to process things and make great decisions and just, you know, bring a quality partner into this business. And so, what I've done is try to just support him, just stay out of his way, and let him just like a great player, give him the freedom to do the things that he can do. And you know, it's been fun to watch. He's been a great partner in all of this.
And some of the hidden gems you guys have found: Jordan Simmons stepped in for DJ Fluker on Monday night. You, George Fant, who played so little, he was a college basketball player. It seems like you guys have more players with less experience than any team.
But we didn't hit on some of our stuff, you know.
Yeah.
We had two big plays on the pass interferences that are like catching a deep ball that are the same almost as catch.
You guys have more players with less experience than any team I've ever seen.
I don't know that that's something we should be proud of, but that is true. You know, there's another one, you know, that J.R. Sweezy's with us. You know, he never played offense before he got to professional football, and he didn't play in college anyway. And so there has been some guys like that. We've taken some shots. I think that's what I'm talking about when I mentioned, you know, John's gut and his instinct on stuff is really exceptional. And he's just found us great players just because he can see through some of the other stuff, you know. And you know, David Moore's a really interesting example of that too, and how he's going to blossom into a fantastic player here. And just take Russell. You know, there's a lot of teams that didn't take Russell when they could have before us. And so I think his track record is really clear, and he's been awesome.
And your team this year, like we were talking about, obviously has great chemistry that translates to the fans. It's very fun. All right, Coach, hold on. Pete Carroll is with us. He's going to spend the rest of the half hour with us. The Seahawks and the 49ers coming up Sunday afternoon. You'll hear it right here on Cairo Radio. And our conversation with Coach Pete Carroll will continue in just a moment here on the Dory Monson Show. With Seahawks coach Pete Carroll in advance of their game coming up Sunday afternoon against the 49ers that you will hear right here on your home of the Seahawks. And Coach, I heard you say something midweek. I wrote down the quote. You said, you tell them, if you're not having fun, then I'm screwing up. And I just thought that was really interesting in how you build team chemistry, because this year it really seems to have gelled.
Well, it is really important to me, and I've always loved this game because we get to play, and I don't use that term lightly. I mean, this is supposed to be something that we do, that we love to do, and we have fun doing it, and you can't wait to get out there again and go see how far you can take it and all the challenges that go along with it. There's a lot of hard work with it, but that doesn't mean that you can't enjoy the hard work too, you know, and so, I've just always kind of held on to that thought, you know, if we're not figuring out the ways to enjoy what we're doing, then I got to get my act together, because I'm the one supposed to keep this thing going in the right direction. So we've always had fun, and this year I don't think really it's any more than other years. It's because we've always wanted to find the good stuff that you can enjoy along with the hard work. But this group in particular is just, they're having a blast with what we're doing, and it's just been really fun to work with them.
Okay, let's talk about your team's health going into Sunday. You had a lot of guys on the midweek injury list.
Yeah, we have a few guys. You know, it's kind of how it goes this late in the season.
Yeah.
We're hoping to see some guys pop, you know, here when we come to game day. But for the most part, we're okay. You know, we're our backup guys that are jumping in have had enough play time. Like Jordan Simmons is a good example. You know, he's going to be his third game starting, but he's done a lot of good stuff, so we're not concerned about that spot as much as maybe you would think otherwise. We'd love to get Fluke back, but we don't think he's going to make it. KJ's not quite ready yet, but he's going to go for it next week. We'll see what that means. He's practicing this week and got through it, and feels great. So there's a chance for him to return. What other people are you concerned about?
Doug Baldwin.
Doug practiced late in the week, and if everything goes well all the way up to game time, he has a good chance to play.
Man, I saw some splits on Russell's stats this week with Doug on the field and Doug off the field, and I know that, you know, he's an impact guy, but with Russ's stats, it was pretty dramatic.
Yeah, well, they've been together a long time, and they see things the same, you know, and so that's such a great benefit when you have that kind of chemistry with your players. Russell's developing a great sense for Tyler as well, but you know, you got a lot of years here in these guys, and when you don't have Doug, there's a difference.
Yep. Okay, you got 49ers coming up on Sunday. You just played them 2 weeks ago. That seems like a strange thing that the NFL can't get a little more separation when you have a division opponent like that. That's kind of weird to play a team twice in 3 weeks.
Yeah, it doesn't happen very often, but with the emphasis of playing division teams late in the season, which they try to do wherever they can on the schedule, it does pop up a little bit more than it used to. But I don't think it's a big deal. I mean, maybe the fans don't take to it or something, but we don't care. You know, we don't care who we're playing. We just want to go out and play football again.
And you guys, you know, handled them pretty well a couple of weeks ago, 27-point win. Any danger? And I know that you have to work all the time to make sure your guys are just on point every second, but is there ever any danger of anybody taking things for granted?
Sure. Every week.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter
yeah.
who you're playing, you know? I mean, that's the constant. It is always making sure that every game is the biggest game in the world, you know, and it's the only one we get to play, and we just don't want to miss it, you know? And so this is no different, you know? And, you know, we always talk about we're learning and preparing to play championship football. Every game is a championship game for us, so that when you get here and there are playoffs out there and all of that, you know how to handle it. And we're not going to do anything different, but that's the challenge. You know, we want to prepare like it's a championship game. We want to take it to the stadium. And when it comes to game time on the field, we want to play like it. And so it doesn't matter who we're playing. That's about us and our preparation. So that's, again, what we're tasked to figure out, and we'll see if we can do it again.
When you guys were sitting at 0-2, you're such a positive guy. When you were sitting at 0-2, how positive were you inside that you'd be talking about, you know, likelihood of the playoffs this year?
Well, that was way too early to be thinking anything other than that. I mean, I got too much positive in me. That's two games in a 16-game year. So that wasn't the case at all. I was disappointed, you know, and I was mad that we put ourselves in that situation. We didn't come out right, you know, but, you know, thankfully now, you know, we found our way back to it. And you know, it's never okay when you don't win a division. You want to win the division, play at home in the playoffs, you know, and we didn't get that done. So we got to make the most of what we have left. And that's to see if we can get something done this weekend and finish this season on a really high note so we can make something of it in the playoffs if we're so fortunate.
Yep. Well, last week you and I talked about momentum. So I really would love to see you guys just keep this roll going on Sunday. Pete, great talking with you, and I'll look forward to chatting next week.
All right. Hey, Joy, one thing I would like to say that I thought that our the 12s just cranked it up this last weekend. It was such a joy to play for the fans and the way they were. You know, we had talked about it a little bit during the week, and you helped us on your show and all that, and they really turned it up. So we'll get back to them in a couple of weeks and get a couple more big ones here at home.
Awesome. Okay, sounds great, Pete. Go get them.
Thank you. See ya.
The coach of the Seahawks, Pete Carroll Show, and we have lots more straight ahead as the Dory Monson Show rolls on.